Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 577, titled Interview with Ed Haslam and Daniel Hopsicker, Truth and Consequences. This has been recorded on November 19th of the year 2006, and it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves together two individuals who have been here separately. First of all, Ed Haslam, the author of Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, the story of an underground medical laboratory, and also Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland and numerous articles on the Mad Cow Morning News website. Gentlemen, welcome to our airwaves.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Bill.
All righty. Well, this we're going to be inaugurating our new conference calling technology here. Today is November 19th, and in 3 days we will be observing the 43rd anniversary of President Kennedy's assassination. Now, as we are speaking, both of your books, that is to say, in this case, Ed's book, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, and also Daniel's book, Barry and the Boys, are either about to be or have been reissued. And I wonder, before we get into some of the points of commonality between two very, very different paths of inquiry that you've engaged in, tell us a little bit about, I wonder if I could ask the impossible and ask each of you to give a synopsis of your books or what you think your books should be recognized for, and tell us a little bit about the new editions.
Well, my book, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, is an investigation into what happened in New Orleans in the summer of 1963 prior to the Kennedy assassination and what happened there in the subsequent years involving both the murder of a doctor whose name was Mary Sherman and the Garrison investigation down there. So in brief, it was an investigation into the murder of Mary Sherman. What I discovered was that while I investigated the murder, I discovered an epidemic involving the contamination of the polio vaccine with cancer-causing viruses, which I think is reasonably connected to an epidemic of soft tissue cancers in the United States. Since then, the book is going to be re-released in an expanded form with new material under the title of Dr. Mary's Monkey. Dr. Mary refers to Dr. Mary Sherman, and the monkey is a reference to the monkey viruses that they were using in their experiments. This is much more focused now, because we have a witness, on the work at David Ferry's apartment and the very clear statements that we have that what they were doing there was trying to develop a biological weapon with these monkey viruses for the purpose of assassinating Fidel Castro.
And Ed, what in For the Record program number 19, you and I did a six-part, three-hour interview on the original version of your book, the original edition of your book. And for people that would like to sort of catch up quickly, that is available for download on Real Audio on the archive website that is maintained by sister station WFMU. So people can learn quite a bit about this this remarkable investigation from For the Record program number 19. We've done other interviews as well. Daniel, would you like to try to maybe sum up it just very briefly, Barry and the Boys, the first of your two books?
Barry Seal was the biggest drug smuggler in American history, and according to the government, during the 1980s, when he brought in 5 tons of cocaine, mostly through Mena, Arkansas. So if you participated or saw anyone who did in the cocaine epidemic in the 1980s, you were putting a nickel in Barry's pocket or the pocket of the people that he worked for. And during the course of researching and writing the book, I discovered that nobody had been interested in who he was before he became the biggest drug smuggler in American history, and who he was a lifelong CIA agent who participated in the Bay of Pigs and the Kennedy assassination and a lot before getting to of the Iran-Contra thing. And the interesting thing was is I kept bumping up against Ed Haslam's book because Barry was recruited into the Civil Air Patrol during a 2-week summer camp by David Ferry, at the same time Lee Harvey Oswald was.
Both of your books are investigations of national security related elements, intelligence community elements, and both have as a starting point not only the city of New Orleans, but specifically the activities of David Ferry. David Ferry was the original target of Jim Garrison's investigation into the Kennedy assassination in New Orleans. In the late 1970s, the House Select Committee on Assassinations was formed to investigate the killings of JFK and Martin Luther King. They concluded that for all that there was virtual certainty that there had been a conspiracy behind Kennedy's assassination. And among the things that the House Select Committee did was to recommend to the Department of Justice that they investigate David Ferry and the anti-Castro Cubans in New Orleans. And of course, that is exactly who Jim Garrison was after in the first place. One of the interesting things, well, there are a lot of interesting things about the Kennedy assassination and its aftermath, but even to this day, even though there was a congressional committee that basically concluded there'd been a conspiracy and that reinforced Jim Garrison's investigation, in the mainstream press and to much of academia, one is a focal point of ridicule if you suggest that there was a conspiracy behind Kennedy's assassination and that Garrison was right. And there's something of a lesson, I think, and I'd like to explore the evolution forward in time. But
Dave, let me jump in right there.
Sure.
Because the only people that think there was not a conspiracy to kill Kennedy are the press and the government. Okay, And 89% of the American people do not believe the government's explanation that Oswald acted alone. And I went back and I researched this through the Gallup organization, because on their website you could go back and look at previous studies. And going back to December of 1963, I'm talking just a couple of weeks after the assassination, the number of people who believed the government's explanation of Oswald acting alone was 32%. Okay. After the Warren Commission officially got up and said, Lee Harvey did this and he did it alone, Lee Harvey Oswald did this and did it alone, that number jumped from like 32% up to 37%. And that was as high as it ever got. And since then, it has been eroding to where it's now down to about 11% was the last number I saw. Now, the question that comes up is, how do you have a situation in a democracy where 90% of the people, 89% of the people, don't believe the government's story, but 90-plus percent of the press coverage only refers to the government story and does so without even qualifiers like alleged? I mean, that just turn around and say Oswald did it. I mean, this is the biggest disconnect that we have in sort of our national family history.
It's profound. And I'm going to pontificate a bit here. Nothing unusual for these broadcasts, as veteran listeners will be aware of. But you know, it was Kennedy's assassination and my research into it that launched me on my life's direction. If it were not for the events of November 22nd, 1963, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. We three would not be assembled here on the airwaves. So it was a major and a determining factor in the course of my life. And one of the things that I think we should reflect on as the 43rd anniversary of Kennedy's assassination bears down on us is when your chief executive, when the head of state of a republic can be cut down like a pimp on a downtown Saturday night, when there was an obvious conspiracy, but when nobody will take stock or nobody in officialdom will take stock of an obvious reality, when a society decides to play pretend and ignore the obvious and the important, it has consequences. When the body politic can be severely wounded and people don't care, then ultimately the members of that body politic wind up with a cancer-causing monkey virus in their veins, or perhaps in the case of people who become addicted to some of the drugs or the elements of the intelligence community and Barry Seal abroad in the country, they wind up with a monkey on their back.
Well, Dave, let me add this comment, because I think this is the real common ground between Daniel Hopsicker's work and mine, is the body politic was already infected by the time that Kennedy got shot. Mm-hmm. There is such an enormous strategic alliance between the power in this government, the power in this country, some of which is in the government, and organized crime, that it's just remarkable. Okay, and the denial that we're talking about is the denial of that. One of the things that I get into in the new version of the book is Lee Harvey Oswald was born and bred into the New Orleans Mafia. Okay, he is so mafia that, and this has never even been discussed, but it sure helps you understand why they wanted to say, oh, this is some lone nut. He just kind of wandered into town, you know, lonely, strange kid. Lonely, strange kid who ate dinner for free all the time at restaurants that Carlos Marcello owned. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an interesting connection where you're able to walk into the mafia boss's personal restaurants and eat for free and nod at the guy at the cash register and walk out. That is not a lone nut.
By the way, Ed, Carlos Marcello was the capo mafioso for New Orleans, one of the most important organized crime figures in the Southwest, and an individual for whom David Ferry worked as an investigator. Go ahead.
Not only as an investigator, but also as a contraband pilot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And which gets into the Daniels territory, that this guy had the skill sets to, you know, to fly planes in and out of foreign countries without being detected or noticed. I mean, he had all kind of skills that he transferred to Barry Seal, as Daniel points out. But the point I want to begin with is just understanding, if you understand how many people Oswald was really connected to and how much power they had, you will clearly understand why the politicians, not the investigators, but the politicians in charge of the Warren Commission said, yep, this is a lone nut, because there's nothing lone nut about Lee Harvey Oswald. And when you start to realize that David Ferry was not only a contraband pilot for Carlos Marcello, not only had a history of doing things with the CIA as part of their Kill Castro projects, but also was involved with the leaders of American medicine in developing a biological weapon whose purpose was to assassinate Fidel Castro, you realize there's a whole lot more to this game than anybody has ever begun to even discuss. And we are now at the end of the investigation into Kennedy. We are at the beginning of it, because we're just starting to realize the forces that collide in this and what's going on in our country with entire secret organizations in the government. And what is the government? You know, you get into this thing of, well, when you have somebody who's a government official but he's using his private money to hire his own spies that he's using against people in other branches of the government, where are these lines drawn? It is confusing, but until you get realistic enough to understand that there is deep connections between organized crime and the government. And in fact, I saw an interview the other night with Dan Marvin. Dan Marvin is also another, Daniel and I are both published by Trine Day. Dan Marvin was a Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel who was involved in assassinations. And he has a book by Trine Day called The Expendable Elite. Now, Dan Marvin was asked to assassinate an American Navy officer who worked in the Bethesda Naval Hospital and who handled the audiovisual things, because this guy had the films of the Kennedy assassination. And when they asked Dan Marvin to do this, his response was, but that's inside the United States. That's the mafia's job. My job is to kill people overseas.
What he was told, by the way, and for listeners who would like to hear sort of an encapsulated account of Dan Marvin, I interviewed Colonel Marvin on the air back in 1996, and that interview is available. It's one of the very first For the Record broadcasts, and once again, like For the Record 19, is available for download from the archive website maintained by sister station WFMU. So Colonel Marvin is indeed somebody that has graced these airwaves and someone whose career path has overlapped those of some of the players that we're going to be talking about in this program. Daniel.
If I can just interject just a line.
Sure, more than that, please.
A good moment to praise the much underpraised Chris Milligan out in Oregon, who is rapidly becoming, I think, the Lawrence Ferlinghetti of his generation, assisting in publishing me and Ed and Marvin and Wayne Madsen and a whole raft. I was amazed going to Trineday.com's website a week or so ago and discovering that my buddy Chris has published, I think, all of 12 books in the last 4 years. And I know it's not easy. And I know he's not making a whole lot of money at it. I think he's just I think he's an American hero.
Yes, I concur with that.
Daniel, you also began following the long and remarkable career pathway of Barry Seal, the largest drug smuggler in the United States. By the way, a man whose death is discussed. I used the occasion and the circumstances of his death to sort of use his life as sort of an in vitro window onto the sub rosa American political culture in For the Record 503, but you began your investigation of the largest drug smuggler in American history, a man who was doing that drug smuggling on behalf of elements of the government, and you began your investigation of Barry Seal back when he, too, was an early associate of the aforementioned David Ferry, an organized crime operative, an intelligence operative, and the commander of a Civil Air Patrol unit in New Orleans that involved, among others, Lee Harvey Oswald. Tell us a little bit about Barry Seal and Barry Seal's boy's life, so to speak.
Easy to do. Barry first began to, well, first of all, what happened in Ed's native Louisiana is unlike what probably most of us experienced. Apparently, national security was a career path down there a long time before it was, you know, in most other parts of the country. Barry Seal was just a 14-year-old kid when he started with the Civil Air Patrol in Baton Rouge and very quickly shifted to a curious Civil Air Patrol unit in New Orleans at Lakefront Airport, which was highly militarized. And that was run by David Ferry. And after reading Ed's book, I was amazed at what I heard about David Ferry. One of the military aspects of that Civil Air Patrol unit that Oswald and Seal were both in was they used to go around the country to Civil Air Patrol big dues and in drill competitions, and they were like the best in the country, apparently. And one time, one of his pilots told me, and I found several still living, that one time they were drilling at Lakefront in anticipation of one of these things, and one of the standards that hold, metal standards that hold the flags, collapsed and gave a serious gash on the arm to the kid that was holding it. And Ferry went over to this kid who had a deep gash in his arm, and he held out his hand in the kid's face, and he said, "You will stop bleeding, you know, and it won't hurt anymore." And it did. And the guy that told me this, who later was an Air Force pilot in Vietnam, so, I mean, he's not a wacky guy, told me that after thinking about it a long time, he realized that the only way that's possible using hypnosis, but it is only possible with a hypnotic subject that you've worked with for quite some time. So Ferry was dabbling in all kinds of things. You know, I mean, the same pilot told me that at Ferry's house in his backyard, he had I don't even know how to describe it, a virtual skeleton with all of the pathways of the arteries and outlined in something. It looked, but it was like it was a skeleton. And he was that was what Ferry was interested in.
By the way, the context of your last couple of comments, Daniel, are the intelligence community's mind control programs in which not only hypnosis but pain drug hypnosis and a number of other techniques have been intertwined and developed and resulted in an extraordinary mind control capability. That has been the focal point of numerous broadcasts, including AFA programs 5, 6, and 7 that are available from Spitfire.
Let me just mention one last thing, and then,
sure.
And then let's feel free to move on. Another Milligan author, Peter Lavenda, has written 3 books, Sinister Forces, which are fascinating. And one of the things he gets into on a pretty serious basis is the network of, what does he call them, rogue bishops, roving bishops, something. See, David Ferry was a bishop in a off-brand, and ask Ed about this because he knows more about Ferry than I do.
Let me jump in very quickly. Now, this is the Old Roman Apostolic Catholic Church, which is an offshoot, a weird occult offshoot of the Catholic Church proper, and which, oddly enough, has a lot of people from Eastern Europe connected with not only the intelligence community, but with White Russian elements, and in the background of that, some of the Third Reich-related intelligence elements that were incorporated into this country at the end of World War II and were also part of the larger Kennedy assassination conspiracy milieu. That was the group that he was part of.
And Peter Lavenda, in his Sinister Forces trilogy, has much more about these bishops. I can't remember the name of what they call them than I had ever heard of before. And they were involved in a lot of things, including the mind control we're talking about.
Right. Now, you traced Barry Seal's early career, and apparently Barry Seal was something of a boy wonder. You in Barry and the Boys, Danny, you mentioned that he was apparently flying national security missions, arms and or possibly drugs, even when he was in his latter years of high school. And then you cite some information that suggests very strongly that Barry Seal, again, associated with David Ferry, one of the principal figures in Jim Garrison's investigation into the Kennedy assassination, you have developed information indicating that Barry Seal might very well have been flying a getaway plane that spirited some of the assassins or assassination conspirators out of Dallas on that day.
Yeah, and here's the most shocking piece of information. In certain circles in New Orleans, this piece of information that you just passed on is an open secret. What took me 2 years to dig out in conversation about an entirely different subject with an Italian restaurateur in New Orleans, he shrugged and indicated that he had known that Seal had flown a getaway plane out of Dallas. You know, like this was like majorly old news.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an open secret, you know, if you're in certain circles. I had planned on doing a book about a drug smuggler in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And on my way down to New Orleans, I stopped and met with the guy who had written the first bestseller, or actually the second, Partners in Power, Dr. Roger and Sally Denton. He was a Guggenheim Fellow and on Nixon's National Security Council, so he was certainly no wacko. And over a Coke in his Santa Fe home, he was.
You mean a Coca-Cola, don't you, Daniel?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We should clarify that, given the context of Barry and the Boys.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. He said to me. He said, "What have you heard about Barry flying a getaway plane out of Dallas after the Kennedy assassination?" And I said, "You know, I didn't know there was a getaway plane." So I didn't know anything about it, but you know, because he'd asked the question, you know, that's the sort of thing that sticks in your mind. I had to look to see if that was possible, and the more I looked, the more possible it grew until eventually it looked way more than possible, but highly probable.
And so that basically was, you know, you started with a drug smuggler in the 80s because Barry Seal was deeply involved with the Iran-Contra-related drug smuggling. But in order to properly chronicle that story, you wound up going back to New Orleans. You wound up going back to David Ferry and events that heavily overlap the assassination of President Kennedy. Gentlemen, we're almost out of time on this side. And I'd like to have each of you... names, basically tell people about how and where they can get the new editions of your books, and then I'm going to toss in a little information as well about how they can expand their knowledge of these subjects. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ed.
Well, first of all, Amazon.com is a pretty well-known and pretty convenient way to get the books. But so is the Trine Day website. That's TRINEDAY.com. That will have Daniel's books and my book on there, as Amazon.com also offers them. Just type in whatever you want. I mean, practically to find them. Dr. Mary's Monkey is the name that my new book will be sold under, and it's on there right now. It's already on for pre-order.
So the title then is Dr. Mary's Monkey.
That's correct.
Okay.
And it's already on Amazon.com, and you can go there tonight and pre-order it. And the moment it comes off the presses, they'll start shipping it.
Okay. And Daniel, go ahead about burying the boys.
MadCowProd.com, of course, and let me put in a little plug for Ed's book. I'm looking forward to reading his new edition of it. For anyone that really wants to get into deeply into places that you never even thought existed, I couldn't stop turning the pages of his book the first time I read it, and 99% of it was stuff I had never even imagined existed. Pretty amazing stuff. And absolutely corroborated by everything I found in New Orleans. So I'm looking forward to your book, Ed.
Thank you. Hey, when we come back from the break, I really want to talk about this new witness that we have, because she was in David Ferry's apartment. This is ground zero to what we're talking about, and that's what I want to talk about when we come back.
Okay. There are a couple of points that I want to make. First of all, this is something that's sort of a posit to some of our past discussions of Daniel Hopsicker's work. This past week, normally Planet Hopsicker is sort of outside of the orbit of conventional journalism. Happily, this past week, that orbit was somewhat disrupted. The International Herald Tribune, a very prestigious newspaper, by the way, ran an article about Wolfgang Boringer, one of the German nationals with whom Mohammed Atta was associated, whom Mohammed Atta referred to as his brother, an individual with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard, links to Eastern European organized crime figures, perhaps even to German Nazi elements dating back to the period between the world wars. That remains to be determined. But in the International Herald Tribune this past week, there was a very definitive article about Wolfgang Boringer, and identifying not only Boringer, again, a German national whom Atta referred to as his brother, but the activities in which Boringer was engaged in as a threat to the United States. So,
Dave, let me make a comment on that real quick. If you've heard anything about the 9/11 stuff maybe not being correct, there's a lot of information out there, and you may think this or you may think that about it. I strongly recommend anybody who's got a question about that read Welcome to Terrorland, which is Daniel's book, because he talks about Mohammed Atta in Venice, Florida. Now, at the time that he was there, I personally was in that airport, and I personally ran into Mohammed Atta there, all right? So I know that what Daniel Hopsicker is talking about in Welcome to Terrorland is right on target and gives you the background to understanding what a big stinking mess the whole 9/11 thing really is.
It's a big stinking mess, and it's a very small world. One more point of information I want to make before we wrap is that also, Ed, your work, too, does not stand altogether alone. There's a book out called The Virus and the Vaccine about the cancer-causing SV40 virus. It's by Debbie Bookchin and Jim Schumacher, a husband and wife couple up in Vermont. This, however, concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 577, interview with Daniel Hopsicker and Ed Haslam, Truth and Consequences. For Ed Haslam and Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.